Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Coulson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives, presented to the public as a dramatic, hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you are all cleared to know the truth. And the truth is that Director Gonzalez is nutso. He is, I think he's going off the deep end here, Josh.
Yeah, you think so? See, I was considering changing my introduction and saying something like, let's see, and I'm Director Stolte.
No? And then you take a drink of water.
Yeah, and I'm Director Stolte.
Yeah, there you go.
I got it.
I think that's good. I think I'll edit that, cut it back in to the beginning.
That sounds good.
So
he's off the deep end, huh? All right. Well, we're gonna throw him a life preserver here. We gotta get our agents back home.
Yeah, I was discussing with one of my coworkers just like, what's gonna happen? Like, are they ramping up to something for Age of Ultron? I mean, this was a really interesting episode. I do not usually whoop and or holler too much with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And this episode got two whoops from me.
Two hoops? Two. What about a holler?
Well, I guess I kind of threw a little holler in at the after the first whoop.
Okay. All right.
Well, and we'll talk about what those whoops. I will point out the whoops. Just see if people can guess them. But they were definitely two different whoops.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, and there's more episodes for the rest of the season that'll lead to the finale. So I expect hollering and hooping coming again.
Yeah. Well, so three episodes left and then Age of Ultron, and then three episodes after Age of Ultron, you know, up to the finale. So lots of interesting stuff going on, and I'm not sure where they're going, but I'm enjoying the ride. This seems to be repeating kind of the season one style, which is, you know, middle of the season, pick up the pace and, you know, kind of move everything on and you know, after a kind of a slow to middling start to the season, I guess. Well, I don't know if you agree with that synopsis.
I agree, but just like last season, although I think this may be even more so.
Well, I thought the beginning of this season was better overall in terms of tone and just familiarity. They had established all the characters, so they didn't really have to do that. So they were allowed to kind of do some different things, and there was a little more action, and that was good. I felt like some of the action might have been lacking a little bit, though I'm sure if I went back and watched it now, it probably would not seem as bad, because you know what's going on. So, But why don't we get into talking about this week's episode, because I just kept writing notes and notes and notes for this. There was so many good things, so why don't we get right into this?
All right, well, let's talk about Afterlife. Season 2, Episode 16, which aired April 7th, 2015, was written by Craig Titley and directed by Kevin Hooks. All right. Well, who brought cupcakes?
Ooh, yummy.
Yeah, I kind of forgot them. I'm sorry. But you know what? Maybe Agent Gonzalez has some for, like, Fitz and Simmons, probably, right?
It might. Cupcakes.
I have and water. Cupcakes and water. if he brings them cupcakes, it might just convince them to start putting their allegiance with the real S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Yeah. And then they could get that pesky toolbox of Coulson's to open, since nothing else seems to be working. Or maybe those sweet treats were brought by the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that are using a battering ram to get Coulson and Hunter in the cabin that Sky's been hiding in.
Landshark.
Or maybe those delicious mini cakes have been offered by Lincoln, you know, Sky's designated transitioner in Afterlife, who's helping her understand and appreciate her new, you know, Quake powers. Though I think she kind of fancies the pizza a little bit more than cupcakes. So, wait. I've got it. I know who brought the cupcakes.
Okay.
It was Deathlok.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, he keeps them hidden away in a secret compartment in his leg, see? And he'll share them with everyone right after he takes out all those S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that have captured Coulson and Hunter now. So let's just hope they're willing to share with everyone.
Hmm. So I'm wondering if the ones that Lincoln might have brought to Sky were Little Debbie Cupquakes. That might be what they were, so... All right, well, we've got some new news, breaking news. It'll be old hat probably by the time this show gets out to air, but there is potentially a new spinoff to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That Entertainment Weekly is reporting. And all they're reporting is that executive producer Jeffrey Bell and S.H.I.E.L.D. writer Paul Bizewski are working on a spinoff of some kind. What that means, will it be a S.H.I.E.L.D. team? Will it be another Marvel Cinematic Universe group? Some people are speculating that it could be Agents of S.W.O.R.D. or something along those lines. It could be Gonzalez's group. It could be Bobby and Mac going off and doing their own thing. Who knows? Nobody knows except for Jeffrey Bell and Paul Bizewski.
Yeah, there's really not that much information about it other than it's going to be a spinoff of the show. That's about all they've told us. So it may not even have anybody from this show, right?
That's true. Yeah, it could be a Deathlok show, or it could have nothing to do with anything other than it takes place and maybe is tangentially connected to S.H.I.E.L.D. in some fashion.
It just seems to me as if they're calling it a spinoff, that it would have some sort of pretty major connection with S.H.I.E.L.D. at least, or at least at first. You know, just to lead away from it. But that's very interesting. And I don't know, you know, by the time the show comes out there, that news will be out there. But I bet we don't know too much more about what's going on. So, you know, we'll keep you updated, right?
Yep. Say you up for doing another podcast?
Another podcast, huh? Hold on, you're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Yep.
You know what? Honestly, if I could quit my job and just do more of these with you, I'd be okay with that. But
yeah, that would be nice. Doesn't pay the rent though, does it?
No, not exactly.
Speaking of not paying the rent, you and I will be out at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim the weekend of April 16th through 19th, which is checking his watch. Oh my gosh, that's next week, Josh.
Oh, okay. So, I'm like excited and yet don't have enough time to get done what I need to get done.
Be using the weekend to get everything together. So if you guys look around for us, you can get a button with the podcast logo on it. If you come over, say hello, let us know that you are listeners of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. Or if you enjoyed Agent Carter Case Files, you can let us know that as well. We might have something for you there. If you look on our Twitter and Facebook feed, you will find images of us and some instructions on with a link back to the Facebook page will tell you probably the best way to go about finding us. There are a couple of different places where I know that we will be, so I've put that down. And otherwise, just look around and you know, use those peepers and keep an... Actually, you know what? People don't tend to notice me by my face, but I was at a convention. I think it was Celebration 4, which was out in Los Angeles, like, 7 years ago now. I was walking by a group of people talking with some other friends, and someone from just the crowd, the line right there, was like, "Oh my God, it's Trivial J!" So they recognized my voice.
That's awesome.
From the podcast. So, I mean, really, if you hear Josh or you hear me, then either someone's listening to this podcast or we are there.
I'll try to talk really loud and obnoxiously. So that, well, I guess I do that all the time, don't I? So I guess you might recognize me. So
Josh carries his own PA system with him, which is really cool yet annoying.
That's normal, right? People do that, right?
Right. Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
So. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting people out there. So I hope you do catch me somewhere. I'll be all around looking and drooling and staring and not at people, but like at the things that are out there. I'll try not to look and drool at you.
Hey, everybody.
I guess it depends, you know, who you are.
Oh, my gosh. All right. I can't take you anywhere, can I? So, all right. Well, another great duo is Fitz and Simmons. So why don't we talk about them on this episode, which we cover Afterlife. So Fitz and Simmons have made they had made an apparent reconciliation the other week, and I felt like there was reconciliation, but then, oh, no, Simmons is doing stuff, and Fitz is getting mad at her again. Oh, boo-hoo. But wait, you know, I called this, like, maybe, like, the second time that we saw a scene with Fitz just kind of being mad at Simmons. I thought it was pretty telegraphed, and I don't know if that's just because I'm always second guessing everything that they're doing, or if it was just like the way it was staged or something like that, or if they were really trying to telegraph it that much. I wanted to get your opinion on like how, like, did you know that this was coming?
Did it seem obvious? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
And you're just talking about this particular
episode,
right?
The twist between Fitz and Simmons here,
right?
And the fact that, you know, she apparently shuns and spurns him, but secretly she and he are working together, and she is back again in an undercover position, just like she was at the beginning of the series or the beginning of the season.
Well, I can't say it didn't seem obvious to me. I mean, as I was watching, I was predicting what was going to happen, you know, to a point, you know, that they were working together for Coulson kind of, but I also think that the way they played it out was believable as far as the other characters go. You know, I thought from where it started, you know, Fitz was really, you know, Gonzalez told him that he's free to leave at any time, whatever. And he said, okay, I'll go pack. And that was cool. And so that kind of set it up for him where they could play that scene later where they were disagreeing, where they were not getting along.
Right.
And yet she sent him that message that only he would pick up on. I guess it was telegraphed, as you say, but I don't think in a way that took me out of the scene and thought, oh, come on, can't everybody see what's going on?
I didn't go that far, but I was definitely like, I think it was this, there was a scene where Bobby's talking to Gemma, and she raises Gemma puts up her goggles or whatever she's got on her face, and she kind of gives this weird sideways glance to Bobby, and then we cut to Mac talking to Fitz, where he calls him Turbo, and he's like, only my friend Mac can call me Turbo, and it's like, oh, dude, snap. and it was in that sequence I was like, nah, Fitz is playing him here. Fitz and Simmons are working together. Something's going on here, so...
He was playing Mac?
Yeah, because he was saying how upset he was because Mac was explaining what Simmons was really doing, and he was acting like he was all upset.
Oh, okay. See, and maybe I'm not, and I've claimed that I'm not as perceptive as you sometimes, but in that scene, it didn't seem to me as if Fitz was quite together with Simmons yet on the scheme until he saw what Simmons was doing to the toolbox, right? He's watching it on that screen there, and Max said something about it being a genetic something or other.
The genetic markers and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Right, and my guess is, and you tell me if you have a different speculation here, but my guess is Fitz knew perfectly well it had nothing to do with that or something, and that's how he kind of knew that she was sending him a signal. I don't know. I couldn't exactly figure out what the signal was.
No, see, I think they had worked it out before in some fashion. Like, they realized that they needed to get the toolbox. And so they knew that Gonzalez was going to come ask Fitz to take a look at it. And he was going to be like, no, I can't do anything with this. And then she's like, okay, well, then I'll tell him that I can do something with it. And then, you know, they worked out a way to sneak it out. I feel like they had it set up all, you know, from kind of the get-go, or at least from early on. So,
well, that certainly makes sense, and I can see that totally working even probably more than my little theory as I was watching. But
yeah.
So yeah, I guess he really was playing match. He's gotten very good at playing people or not making his feelings clear to people that are there. Whereas Simmons, she's still pretty much Simmons. I mean, you can tell, like you said, from those sideways glances and that kind of innocent, inexperienced agent kind of attitude.
Well, what I realized in this episode is that Fitz is pretty much cured. To be able to be thinking around all these problems with them, he wasn't having any issues this episode.
Yeah, he didn't really seem like it, other than the brooding, which he's been doing all season, but.
Right. And he's still kind of in that place, but he's not stuttering. You know, he's thinking clearly, apparently. So I think that all worked well. He also gave a really nice speech about everybody else seems to be fearful, and he doesn't believe in that. He believes in trust in terms of, you know, like as a belief system. And I just thought that was an interesting way to put it, because there was all this discussion about Gonzalez. Basically, he was working through all the individuals in the episode, all of our SHIELD members, you know, kind of trying to poke and probe at them to find out information and maybe turn some of them against others. Uh-huh. So he was trying to convince, you know, Simmons to work with him. He was trying to convince Fitz to work with him. And he says that they are loyal to a man, but not to SHIELD, which is an organization. So what's your thought about this? Is because Gonzalez seems to think that loyalty, or apparently he thinks this, that loyalty to an organization is greater than your loyalty to an individual. And I kind of wanted to get your just take on that.
Well, I think in an environment like this, where you work for an organization, say a military organization or a intelligence agency kind of organization, I think that's kind of the idea when they bring you on, is to be loyal to the organization. And I think you see that a lot. I mean, you see that a lot in movies and stuff, and anytime they having problems with the leaders of the organization because they're starting to become corrupt or something like that. But I think really what the general idea that maybe sometimes people don't get is that it's not the organization itself that you're supposed to be loyal to, but the idea of what the organization's all about. Because if you're loyal to an organization, then it really doesn't matter where that organization goes. If they start to lead you down the wrong path, or if they start to turn into mostly Hydra agents, or if, you know, they start to become corrupt or more powerful, or if you're in a big company, it becomes a monopoly. You're sort of, if you're loyal to just that organization, then you start to be one of the bad guys if they go that way. Instead, you're loyal to the idea, which is why I think Coulson has so many people that are loyal to him, because he's not just loyal to the organization. He is loyal. He's dedicated to what is right, what he believes is the right thing, right? And I think that, you know, his...
That's what May thinks, too.
Exactly,
May says that when Gonzalez uses that line on her, she's like, what's the difference? They're the same thing. When he says, you know, you're loyal to Coulson and not to SHIELD, she's like, there is no difference.
Right. Coulson is SHIELD. He is like that idea. He is the symbol for good. That's what Coulson is, because he's the Boy Scout. You know, he is the guy whose ethics never really break. I won't say bend, because every once in a while he does something. But that's kind of okay. That you have to be bending. You have to be bendable to be a true hero, because sometimes you have to know that what's right in that situation may not be right in every situation, right? I mean, this could be a whole, you know, semester-long class on ethics. But I really believe, I think that Coulson is that image, and I think that's why so many people are dedicated and loyal to him. May, for sure. Fitz and Simmons, for sure. Sky, I think, for sure. And, you know, even Hunter, has kind of shown that. He went to Coulson. We talked about that last week. And I think that Bobby is there and doesn't quite accept it yet.
She needs to make that last leap. She needs to take that leap of faith, basically, that he is everything that she believes in, and more, I guess.
Yeah. Well, she needs to come to the realization of something that she already feels in her gut, because you can see that's what's causing her to have that doubt, is that, look, I'm loyal to S.H.I.E.L.D., and Coulson's not apparently in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. Instead, it's Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Because Coulson's been, quote unquote, compromised, or I don't know actually if anybody actually said that, so I guess I don't need the quotes. But so that was kind of my take on it. What a fantastic trail of thought that leads you down. It's a fascinating thing to discuss, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely this season has been about ideologies, right? So it's Coulson having to find himself and decide what S.H.I.E.L.D. means to him. I mean, Fury told him to recreate it as he sees fit. So he had to figure out what is that? What does that mean? And then we get these opposing ideologies. We've got Hydra. We've got the real S.H.I.E.L.D. here. And, you know, it's not everybody's, you know, everybody's not bad. Though I would really argue that Hydra is doing things to be bad, but you know, it's all points of view, and they think they're doing things for the right reasons. I believe Gonzalez really does believe that until they give me a reason to think that he may be playing with everybody.
Right. But I agree. I mean, I think he's a good guy. He's just maybe been a little misguided or maybe jaded from his experiences.
Right. His experiences have led him to the place that he's at now, where he's so distrustful, yet he wants to foster a world of trust. He's a walking paradox in my book.
And you know, there's something about Nick Fury, okay, that kind of gives people the same feeling about that, about him, you know, doing what's right, what's good. People follow Fury to their death. You know, they're extremely loyal to Fury. Mm-hmm. Lots of people are extremely loyal to Fury. But something kind of interesting that you said earlier, you know, Fury put Coulson in charge and said, create S.H.I.E.L.D. how you see fit. I mean, who else would he say that to? Because Fury sees that same kind of quality in Coulson, I believe, too, and sees mm-hmm. that he's even with the alien blood inside him. Even with the alien blood, he believes that Coulson is that person. He told Gonzalez or Bobby or somebody, you know, he told them to sink that carrier.
Yeah, because that was Bobby's order to blow up the carrier so that it didn't fall into the wrong hands.
Mm-hmm. He didn't say, hey, Bobby, why don't you rebuild S.H.I.E.L.D. too? You're good. I mean,
right. No, I mean, there were plenty of other people he could have talked. He could talk to Maria Hill. He could have told Agent May. You know, so you could have told Captain America, you know, to do it, but, well, you had mentioned, the dialogue between Fitz and Simmons a little bit earlier. And I want to just play this quote because I think this is a great, illustration of the level of writing on the show and the intelligence that they give to the different characters and just the levels of meaning that can be derived from simple, relatively simple lines on the show.
You want me to leave, don't you, Gemma?
If we work for S.H.I.E.L.D., we have a duty to carry out our responsibilities. So perhaps it's best if you do.
So, to everybody else standing around, Fitz has asked the question, you want me to leave, don't you, Gemma? And she answers that at the end of her sentence, so perhaps it's best if you do. Meaning, yes, it's perhaps best if you leave S.H.I.E.L.D. here. But if you listen to what she's saying and you know that she and Fitz are in cahoots together, she says, if we work for S.H.I.E.L.D., not the real S.H.I.E.L.D., but Coulson's S.H.I.E.L.D., we have a duty to carry out our responsibilities. So it's best if you do. It's best if you carry out your responsibility. And your responsibility is to leave, because you have to take that black box, the toolbox, back to Coulson so that he can continue his mission. Because even though it sounds like she's loyal to Gonzalez's S.H.I.E.L.D., she's actually saying she's loyal to Coulson's S.H.I.E.L.D. And I just thought that was a brilliant scene, because the first time I watched it, it was she's telling him to leave. And the second time I watched it, I'm like, oh, wait a second. She's telling him to take the box and go. Wonderful. I love it.
That was good. And I hadn't realized up till this point that they were using some 70s action TV series music in some of the scenes there. That was
The soundtrack doesn't really stand out to me a lot, but there were some definite good music cues, I guess, in this particular episode. Some of them in at the cabin with Coulson and Hunter,
yeah,
and then there were some other good musical cues in Lai Shi in the afterlife.
Yeah, I noticed that too, especially there.
Because they had the kind of the Chinese-influenced music and stuff there. So Skye is dead, and she's in the afterlife, right? No, she's not really dead, but she is in this place called, that people refer to as afterlife. Not necessarily the afterlife, but a afterlife, I guess. I don't know how familiar you are with Iron Fist.
But you're going to ask me how familiar I am with the afterlife. I'm not familiar with Iron Fist.
Iron Fist is a martial arts character that was created in the 70s to capitalize on the martial arts craze that was happening in the mid 70s. Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Okay.
Man, those cats. Fast as lightning. And he studied in a mystic place called Kun Lun, and it is very similar to what we were seeing in Lai Shi. There is no way to actually reach Kun Lun, save for every 10 years there is a mystic portal that opens and allows people to move into it, and time passes differently in Kun Lun, and that's where Danny Rand went and trained to become the Iron Fist. Hopefully we will see some more of that coming up in maybe a year or so on the Netflix series, because they're going to do an Iron Fist series on Netflix. But my question to you is, so where is Lai Shi? Where do you think it is? Is it on Earth? Could it be on the moon? Is it another dimension? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, other than the fact that they said Gordon's the only one that can get him there, I didn't really see any evidence that it was anywhere off Earth. You know, obviously my first thought was probably somewhere in China. Without having too much more evidence, I'm not really sure. I would say somewhere on the Earth in a distant land.
Well,
how's that for a specific answer?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, the Inhumans, when they were introduced, they were hiding in a hidden valley in the Himalayas. And those are some big mountains around them. So, you know, somewhere in Southeast Asia, you know, something like that would be my guess as well. So I don't really know. I didn't see Kung Fu Panda or anything hanging out there, but he could have been there.
Yes, he could have been there.
Poe, thank you. And China, I mean, is a really good guess. There were lots of Torii and Paifang inspired architecture, which are those red gates that they had around. There were a lot of either stone or clay warrior statues and other Chinese architectural motifs, I guess. So, and given that Jiaying appears to be Chinese, they had talked about Sky having been found in, where was it, in a province in Hunan, China, or something like that, when she was rescued as a baby.
Right.
And then Jiaying referred to the place as her house. So it could be a hidden and mystical sort of operation, but it still could be in, you know, in a place here on the planet, just someplace that is really not possible to reach without having the teleportation powers that Gordon has.
So my question that I had as I was pondering this, watching the show, is what if something would happen to Gordon while he was out there?
That is a great
question.
What
would happen to all these people, you know? So I don't know. I mean, could they get out? Could they get down or somewhere else? I was very concerned for them when they said that.
Well, yeah, I mean, just, you know, having, oh, we can't, you know, come or go without Gordon. It's like, well, Gordon, this episode, I was getting a lot nastier vibe from him. I felt like he was kind of a nice guy in previous episodes and, you know, kind of manipulative last episode when he took Sky from the cabin, just in things he said. But I never really felt that he was, you know, problematic, or that anything was problematic about him. But this particular episode, I just got that, you know, he's saying what he can say. Like, he's like, oh, I could ask the elders if I could give a message to your friends, but they're going to advise against it. So I don't even think I should go talk to them. And, you know, he's lying probably not to Lincoln, but to Sky, definitely, about Raina being there and Cal. They've got him hidden somewhere as well. Yeah. So it's
apparently there. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I because Jiaying came to see Cal, so I'm assuming he's.
Yeah, but she came with Gordon, though, didn't she?
Yeah, possibly.
Am I remembering that wrong?
Well, and yeah, the architecture in the room was similar to other rooms, but yeah, you're right. We don't know that it's the same place.
And then one other thought I had about this particular place, especially the room where they were keeping Cal. If you remember back a couple episodes ago when they first introduced Gordon as a you know, a teenager or
yeah.
whatever,
mm-hmm.
I think they even gave the year back in the mid-80s or something, wasn't it?
Yes, because it was before Jiaying got killed, supposedly.
Right. And my thought was it looked very similar to the room where Cal was. Now, I don't know if it's the same one or not, but that was before they were bringing people to this afterlife via Gordon, clearly, because he had just got there.
Oh,
so
right.
So that's why I wondered if maybe Cal is in a different place, or maybe after they had Gordon, maybe they cut off all access to this place. Yeah, I don't know.
It good
was
point.
Just, these were just things that I was pondering as I was thinking, where's Cal? Where is the afterlife? Where is, you know, how does Gordon leave? Does he, you know, is he really careful not to run into things when he's popping around? You know,
how does it work?
So it felt as if Cal was there. And I think Cal even asked, you know, she's here, isn't she? Or something like
right,
that.
Right.
So it felt as if he was right there. I'm just, I still don't have a good feel as to where they are.
So with all things Sky in this episode, even though she wasn't around with any of the other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, she was kind of off on her own adventure for this episode, which I enjoyed. I really enjoyed all the transitions. I didn't feel that anything was really confusing or anything, you know, jumping back and forth between all the different storylines they had. But we find out that, you know, Gonzalez is just a jerk because he keeps referring to Sky as a thing. I mean, literally a thing. And, you know, Bobby is like, no, she's an agent. You know, she was scared and, you know, she's giving excuses, but she's humanized Sky. I mean, she's worked with her for a long time. And I think this is just another strike against Gonzalez. And I'm concerned that they are building too many things up to for us to hate Gonzalez when, you know, and then they're going to reveal something that where it's like we feel like we should be backing him for some reason, some other reason. And I'm not sure if they're going to let that other shoe drop or if they're just, you know, if they're really just setting him up this way to show that he's really out of touch. Like everything he says that Coulson is actually Gonzalez, you know, like Coulson's rubber and Gonzalez is glue, right? So everything he says bounces off Coulson and sticks back to him. I don't know. But he was being a jerk. I mean, there's no reason to talk about another person that way, you know, even if they've got superpowers. And I can't really say that there's any reason to really think that she's, well, I guess from his standpoint, I guess she is dangerous.
No, you know what? He's prejudiced. I mean, that is the word for the way he's acting. He's not judging somebody based on individual traits or characteristics that he knows. He's judging them based on, well, I guess it is individual traits or characteristics, but it's generalized, right?
Right.
Anybody with powers, anybody with potentially dangerous abilities shouldn't be trusted.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got a backstory about that and seems to know what happened in Bahrain with Melinda May. And yeah, you're right. I think he is prejudiced against powered individuals for whatever other reason. So Sky is trying to come to grips with her power. Lincoln points out that the gloves may not have been a good idea because that was causing her even more problems. So he had to use this, the acupuncture, you know, probably purging her chakras to get all the bad energy out of her and seemed to fix her, right? She doesn't seem to be having the bruising and stuff on her hands. So she seems to be doing okay. Sky?
Now, did you get... I liked Lincoln. I mean, he seemed like a decent guy. Who knows? Maybe he's not. But
yeah.
I did get kind of a weird feeling when he was talking about her gloves.
Because he said he had to go check them out or something, right?
Yeah, it almost felt like he was telling her that they may have done more harm than good, and it wasn't actually true. I don't know why. I mean, like I said, I don't have any evidence. It was just kind of a weird feeling I got when he was talking about the gloves.
He did seem to be pushing her in, you know, to stay, right? Remember, you can't leave because you really are being hunted. These gloves did damage to you. And meanwhile, we find out that, you know, you've got Gordon yelling at Cal, saying, you know, screaming at him, you will not, you know, see your daughter and, you know, we'll take care of her as well as you or something along those lines. So Gordon's kind of pissed about something because, you know, Cal's been messing stuff up. And of course, Sky and Raina jumped the line, so to speak. And, you know, maybe they weren't supposed to do it all old school. Maybe there's a reason why these powers are, you know, people are transitioned in a way not using a Kree temple and a diviner, because maybe that makes you more powerful. Like maybe they're trying to control how much power some of these individuals have for some reason. Maybe the elders are, you know, have ulterior motives for this. Like, why would they be making all these superpowered people not to put them out in the world or something like what's the end game for the elders? And is Jia Ying one of them? Which I think she probably is, because she's pretty eld.
She's pretty eld.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, I would say so, yeah.
But
and she, you know, you go ahead.
No.
Go ahead,
keep
talk
going.
About Jia Ling.
No.
Well, you know, she also, you know, she didn't reveal herself to Sky. She didn't say she was Sky's mother.
Right. She just said, you work with me, and if we feel there's a connection, why? I mean, my question with Jia Ying is that why would she ever have really loved Cal? Like, we just thought she lived a long time, but she freaking seems to be immortal. I mean, like, you blow her up and cut her into pieces and put them away different places, and she kind of oozes back together, I'm guessing. I don't, like... This is like Deadpool level stuff here. I don't know. I mean, unless it's her twin sister. Oh, sister. But why would, like, there didn't really seem to be any connection between her and Cal. Like, that was the creepiest hug. Cal was like, oh, hi, and he gives her the hug, and she's just, like, staring off into space, like, all right, get off me.
Well, maybe he wasn't always like this. Maybe after she died, or he thought she died, he got a little wacky. Or maybe that's when he started to get that rage, whatever caused that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Maybe.
You know, people change. People change after you get married. You know, things are different. So.
But she's going to be Sky's guide, which will be interesting because there will be, you know, there will be this moment, I'm sure, that will come out where Sky realizes or finds out that that's her mom and then feels betrayed because it's like, why didn't you just tell me in the first place? Because that's how these things, you know, play out and everything like that. Sky feels, though, that she and Raina are nothing alike. Sky continues to deny this, like, to the heavens. And I think she is in complete denial. I mean, they are, just because Raina looks different, Raina and Gordon are the only ones that look different. Everybody else seems to look like a human without any kind of deformities or, you know, wings or whatever.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does seem to be. At least so far, what we've seen. We haven't seen that.
Yeah, what we've seen. But I think Sky, I think that is Sky's bigotry showing through right there. I mean.
But do you think she's saying they're different because of the way Raina looks? Because it seemed to me like.
No, it's not just that. I mean, she's talking about on a philosophical or a fundamental level. But I think Raina was told about this transformation from a young age. Her grandmother told her these stories. So her grandmother is someone who knew about this. And Lincoln had said that some people, some lineages or descendants have been lost or they can't find them or something like that. So Raina might have been one of those people. Like, her lineage got lost somewhere. So the grandmother knew about stuff and told Raina as a young girl. So her entire life, she's been dreaming of this, whereas Sky doesn't know about it, but she kind of knows that she's destined for something more than she's doing. I think Sky does, right? I mean, that's... She always felt that she was special in some fashion. And... you know, Raina's affirmation that they are the same is, I mean, deep down, they are both these genetic aberrations that are the next evolutionary step or many steps beyond where humankind is right now. And I think Raina's really coming at it from a beyond philosophy level. Like, you know, we are just the next step, and you are that as well. Like, she's trying to convince Sky that Sky is one of these individuals, and Sky's like, no, you know, I'm the same person I was, and I want to get rid of these powers. It's Sky doesn't see it as having gone to that next level, I guess.
I don't think, you know, Sky doesn't see that she has changed. Sky thinks that she has something, you know, has
caught something right,
inflicted with something, whereas and I think Raina kind of felt like that at first too, but Cal, you know, told her, oh no, and yeah, this is part of the deal, you know, he's just it's you now, surprise. So I and Raina has begrudgingly accepted that, or, you know, at least understands that. She doesn't really accept it, as she wants Sky to kill her.
But
possibly through, you know, what's his name? Lincoln's line that tells her, you know, this is how it is now, and the fact that he lied to her, or at least didn't tell her that Reyna was there, and seeing Reyna and her telling it, I think now Sky is understanding that, has come to that realization. And that realization, I think, is what will sort of push her, encourage her to work with Jiaying and at least hear where she can go from here. Because now she understands that she can't get rid of it. At least I think she does.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I'm sorry. I thought you knew. I'm sorry. I thought Gordon told you. Didn't Gordon tell you? That was Lincoln's favorite line. It's like, yeah, well, about that. I should have mentioned earlier. It's like nobody's told Sky anything. It's like, come on, dude. Like, your conceit was that she doesn't know what's going on, yet you keep forgetting to inform her of certain things. So, well, I'm afraid that it seems like, at least based on the previews, we're not going to get maybe much of this story with Sky and her mom working together next week, just due to the flashbacks that they're working on. But maybe there'll be some. I'm just really interested to know what they're going to do to explain Jiaying coming back. And, of course, if she's alive, could that mean that Whitehall is still alive? Because he was just shot. I mean, she was cut up into pieces. Now, granted, it's just because he injected himself with her bodily blood, fluids, whatever it is, doesn't necessarily mean it'll transfer, but there might be something going on there.
Yeah, I guess I see that as a very likely possibility, depending on a couple things, depending on, you know, what they ended up doing with Whitehall. He was at the temple when they were, you know, doing cleanup and all that, above the temple.
Yeah, yeah, in the building or whatever, in the hotel or whatever it was.
Yeah, and also depending on exactly what went on with Jiaying, if it is Jiaying, if it's another Jiaying, if it's, depending on how she was able to come back. So I see Whitehall being back as an extremely likely possibility.
Would be very interesting. Let's go back to Gonzalez. He, after trying to work on Fitz and Simmons for a while, he then went in to work on May and offered her a position on their board, the Real S.H.I.E.L.D. board. And he apparently is serious.
Board. don't call it something more interesting than a board. You're S.H.I.E.L.D. for crying out loud.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to be a world council or anything like that. So he offers May a gun and says, you know, if you don't think I'm doing the right thing, you know, feel free to shoot me, which, you know, that's it's a pretty risky ploy to pull. But obviously he's been reading files on her because he had the Bahrain file there. And May picks up the gun and then slides it back to him and says, you know, you'd be crazy to give me a gun that's loaded. And he takes it apart and shows that it actually was loaded with bullets. I'm going to ask you and everybody else out there, don't you think May knows what a loaded gun feels like?
I would have thought so. That kind of shocked me. So much so I second guessed what he was actually doing. I'm like, did he really take bullets out of there, or did he, what was going on? Yeah, I don't know. I would have thought May would have clearly known.
I think
maybe
she does.
Was just making him think that.
Yes. I think that she is making him think that she doesn't realize that. For what purpose at this point, other than to gain his trust or to make him think that he's pulled something over on her, right? That he's superior? Because, you know, in a lot of those sort of stories, when, you know, you got one character who all of a sudden feels superior to somebody else, they start getting lax. It's like, oh, well, I'm so much smarter, I'm so much superior that, you know, oh, this person won't realize what I'm doing. But obviously, they actually do. And I think she's trying to give him a false sense of security because we know Coulson's going to come back, or she's going to escape in some fashion. I mean, shoot, if Hunter can escape from them, I'm pretty sure May will be able to get out of there with no issues.
So, yeah, I don't think she would have a problem doing anything she needs to do in there.
Yeah.
I think she's staying on purpose, though, staying to kind of watch and
get some other intel. And maybe it's that she and Fitz and Simmons have talked or something like that, and they've all worked out a plan, and they're you know, they all kind of know what everyone else is up to. Right now, it does seem like they're all working individually. Well, Fitz and Simmons are working together, and May's working by herself to kind of do what she needs to do. But there may be collusion there as well. So
yeah, I agree.
Coulson and Hunter, amazing stuff. Really hilarious buddy comic, buddy comedy. And if this is the spinoff that they're going to be doing, I would sit down and watch this every week. These guys just kind of fly around the country and drink whiskey out of Hunter's hip flask. Do crazy
steal
stuff
cars
like
from Honest Eddie.
Yeah, yeah. Now it looks like this car right here. Oh my God, that is my car. So
that reminded me of the scene in the Muppet movie when Kermit Fozzie Bear were getting a bear or a car. I don't know why it reminded me of it. It was nothing like that. It just
the original Muppet movie, right? The 70s, 1979.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I can see that.
I can't remember who classic comedian they were getting a car from. I can't remember who they were buying it from now. But
I want to say it was like anyway. Pat McCormick, maybe, but I don't remember. So, but Coulson has a really interesting take on the whole kerfuffle with the real shield. He wants to see it from Gonzalez's side. He's, you know, Hunter's like, well, you know, why are we doing stuff this way? And he's like, no, but think about it. Gonzalez might, you know, has a good point or something like that. And it makes Coulson very smart because he's not only is he trying to figure out what he needs to do to survive, he's also thinking from the standpoint of his enemy, right? Because if you understand your enemy, you understand the situation. You can understand the situation a little bit better, and it may help you understand your own viewpoint help clarify your own viewpoint.
Now, do you think he may possibly be second-guessing his situation? I don't want to say himself. I think he's –
I think that's part of Coulson's makeup. He is – he's mostly sure most of the time. But then he gets these glimpses of things not being right. And whether or not this is just him or this is part of the alien DNA or something else, because he had a bad feeling about Sky. And then he started to think about, well, maybe this isn't right. And he had a plan all worked out. Now, did the plan include actually getting captured by the real shield? Maybe not. And was his backup really late? I don't know that either. It seems to have been played more for laughs at that point and a surprise. But he has reason to doubt about stuff. So, and I like that because it helps make his character much more human. He is totally fallible. But he's smart. He's quick on his feet. And he can help think himself out of a jam, which is really cool. And he decides to, I think for part of this episode, I was thinking that Ward was the backup he was talking about. Well, that wasn't the case. But Ward is going to be the next stop on the Get Shield Back Together road tour. They're getting the band back together. And he's going to go grab the devil that he knows, a.k.a. Ward, to stop the devil that he doesn't know, a.k.a. Gonzalez and the real shield. So, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I think that's, you know, there's going to be an allegiance of some kind. Because he's right, Ward is the only one who has been able to play all sides, or has been in touch with all the sides of the, or all the factions that he's dealing with here. Cal's group, the real shield, Hydra. So Ward's been there, done that. So
is that why you think he's just because he is knowledgeable about everything?
Ward's got,
I can't.
Well, remember, we had talked about this when Coulson and Ward split, I want to say it was the end of season one, but it could have been one of our early season two episodes that we talked about this. Coulson let Ward stay out there for a reason. And I think he's been keeping tabs on him, Ward. I think Coulson's been keeping tabs on Ward because he knows what's going on, and he can be of use. I think that's what it is. It's that Coulson sees he's an asset that he can make use of, and he just, you know, he has to play it safe to be able to keep Ward at his distance and stuff like that to avoid any getting any collateral damage or stuff like that. But yeah, I really think that's where he's going with that. Do you have a different take?
No, I was wondering if he's just going because he knows Ward has the skills that could really help him, or if there's a different reason specifically for Ward. It seems like a really risky move.
He might be giving Ward a second chance, just in the fact that, he wants to, Coulson is about that. He's about the second chance. And, it's like, hey, I know you've done some bad things, and this is your chance to atone for that. Now, Ward may be too far gone. He's gone a little nutso, I know, so.
I can't see Coulson doing that, but maybe not. I mean, after everything he said and the way he acted around Ward the rest of the season, it would surprise me if he'd be giving him a second chance, but yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I'm interested to see what's going on with that. And then, of course, the saving the best for last here, Deathlok. That was my first big whoop and holler. That was great. I was not expecting him to come back, and I like that the show can do that and surprise us with things like that. He's been hunting Dr. List, who is the last Hydra member that they did not catch and or kill the other week, and he's been working with Baron Strucker in Europe. He was the one from the Winter Soldier end scene where he's been operating on Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. So hopefully Mike will stick around for the rest of the season. I liked his upgrades. He looks good. He looks really buff. I think.
Yeah, he does.
J. August Richards looks like he's been working out a little bit. So, and I liked having Deathlok around because we got to see some superpowers, basically. So it was, and it made for some funny bits. The fact that he can hear everything that Coulson and Hunter are talking about behind him, and him downloading the how to fly the Quinjet data and stuff like that. That was all pretty cool. And then the very tail end of this episode is, I'm going to say, it's the best ending to a S.H.I.E.L.D. episode yet so far. We had Fitz finally got a chance to get his prosciutto and mozzarella sandwich with a hint of aioli pesto. He didn't get to eat it in the first season because Ward tossed it out in the episode where they were sneaking into the facility in Russia, I think it was. So that was my second whoop. I thought that was pretty cool.
So that, I took that as a symbol of Fitz and Simmons being Fitzsimmons again.
Yes. Yeah.
As of that sandwich, that they're back to being a team.
Yeah, and that was the confirmation, of course, that they were working together from the scene that we saw earlier. So, again, I wasn't confirmed that they were working together, but I had a hint for it. But as soon as he pulled out the cube and then the sandwich and then, of course, the note on there. And she made it up so nice. She, like, wrapped it in paper and put, like, a string around it and everything. And she wrote the little note for him. It was really touching. And just a great character moment. And yes, Fitzsimmons is back, and I was very excited about that. So I'm glad that they added that in for us. So
me too, and I hope to see more of Fitzsimmons partnering up. Although I don't think we're going to see it terribly soon, just because of where they both are. She's kind of got that inside job right now, and he's off to find Coulson, I'm assuming.
Yeah, yeah. So it's great. She's working undercover as a mole with Bobby again, just like we saw at the beginning of the season. It's a very interesting cyclical sort of motif that they've got repeating here. So very interesting. We've got one piece of feedback here. which is actually it's kind of a retraction slash feedback, I guess. You want to tell us about this?
Yes, and it's a crossover feedback, a podcast crossover. Can we do that?
Wow, geez, yeah, it's a crossover, an interdepartmental crossover, because it's well, it's crazier. Anyway, just go ahead.
We can do that. All right, so this is from Mark, and Mark sent us an email, said, hey, you know what? Sorry, I didn't realize something. The picture of the Gobbler, which he sent us last week, picture of the villain, the Gobbler, wasn't from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. case files. It was actually a character that you mentioned on Green Justice. So sorry. So apparently we were talking about the Gobbler on Green Justice. The suggestion came from Draw Back Your Bow. You said that your friends agreed that that should have been a Valentine's episode, which was called Cupid, and that there or the, that's who
because
was on
it had
the
Cupid.
Episode Cupid. Yeah. Draw Back Your Bow was the name of the episode, and that there should have been the Gobbler for the
because it was a Thanksgiving airtime episode.
Right. Sorry, but you can count on me during Red Tape, who was mentioned in Case Files.
Okay, good. I don't remember what episode we talked about Red Tape, but he was a supervillain that we had talked about here. So
you got to remember these things because they come back, right? The villains come back.
Right, right. They always return. And we want to just welcome all of our new listeners and all the new people that have been joining us on Facebook. It's been great to see all of the flurry of activity that we've had going on over there this week. So
yes, welcome
to everybody that's joining us for the first time. So we've got a few references from this episode. Not really any comic book references here. We did get Hunter referring to Gonzalez as, quote, the love boat captain, which, of course, Josh, I'm sure you will know, is Meryl Stubing from 1977 to 1987.
Now I want to see Gonzalez in white shorts.
which would make Bobby your, not your purser. Was it purser? Who was Julie McCoy.
Yeah, Julie. What was her? I don't remember.
And Mac would be Isaac the bartender.
Okay. All right. We need a gopher now.
Digging this gopher. Fitz might just fit in his gopher at this point on the because he's going to go for Coulson, I guess.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well, it all works out. See,
the battering ram that the real S.H.I.E.L.D. agents were using to tear down the door appeared to be the same battering ram that was used in the Winter Soldier to break into Fury's car. And then a couple people I had seen online, I think, including your brother. Had this idea, and you may have saw this as well, when the holograms of Coulson and Hunter playing cards appeared to be a nod to the hologram of Lex Luthor and Otis playing chess from Superman in their jail cell. Or Superman 2 in their jail cell.
Right.
Where they've actually already broken out and the guard comes by to check on them and realizes that they're playing, that they're just, it's the same motion repeated over and over again, so...
So he stands there and stares at it for quite a while.
Yeah, that was cool. I kind of figured that out too, but they sure got that hologram set up relatively quickly. They had a whole hour to prepare for it. They were just kind of sitting around, and then at the very last minute, Coulson's like, "Oh, you like cards?" I'm like, "Geez, you got like 3 minutes left. What the heck have you been doing?"
They had to record themselves playing cards first, right?
Right,
and then set it up,
and then hide,
and then play it, and then hide.
So, oh well. It made for a fun scene and you know, a little action and excitement and everything there. So, well, that's all we've got for this week, but we will be back next week with the Melinda May flashback episode, and we will be recording that live from Star Wars Celebration Anaheim. So please join us next week at the regular time for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to be recording face-to-face for once. That's nice.
Oh, so. Maybe we can just sit back-to-back so it seems like we're not in the same room. Just, I don't know if I can handle it.
Yeah, it might be a good idea.
It's too awesome.
I typically don't record with pants on, so I mean, that's might be a good idea anyway.
Well, that's cool. I usually take my shirt off, so I think we'll be balanced out there.
Awesome. All right. Well, we'll do that somewhere in a public place. So, well, we hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please make sure you leave some feedback for us on iTunes. We would love to see some more feedback here soon. Also, you can contact us and tell us how you like Red Tape or any other villain that we need to create soon, or any other thing you want to tell us Our email is shield@randomchatter.com. Also, you can see us on Twitter at Agents Podcast or our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/agentspodcast.
You can also check out the other podcasts that Josh and I host, Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, also available at randomchatter.com. All shows are also available at the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. Sounds like a lot of people have been talking to their friends, so keep it up. We'd like to get more people listening. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files for this week, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7.
This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.